plugged into Long Island on Long Island's number one hit music station, 106.1 BLI and 102.3 WBAB, Long Island's only classic rock.
Hi, it's Cooper from The Cooper Lawrence Show. I am here with Susan Samaru and Eileen Pilateri from the Mora Foundation. The Mora Foundation is one of my favorite organizations out here in Long Island, but I'm going to let them tell you about it, and they'll tell you all the things I love about it. Susan, just first give us an idea of the Mora Foundation and what you guys do.
Sure. So we have been around for over 22 years here on Long Island. The Mora Foundation was founded by Dr. Virginia Mora. I feel like everybody here on Long Island knows Dr. Mora. She's a breast surgeon that practices out of Winthrop Hospital, and she's just a dynamo. Going back 22 years ago, I think it was a very different time when it came to breast cancer. A lot of people didn't really talk about it. If you got diagnosed, it was something that you kept under wraps. And there wasn't a lot of information out there for people. And Dr. Mora realized and during just in her regular day-to-day work how much education was needed. And she started providing that education to people on a one-to-one basis. And then she started educating their families. And what she was hearing from her patients often was, I wish I had known this information before. I wish I had done things a little differently. And if I had this knowledge, perhaps I would have done that. And she continued that education, and she was growing out of her office. She started educating in her basement, and then she realized, you know what? I need to really kind of formalize this a little more, make it more of an organization. And she started the foundation as a formal 501c3 nonprofit. And we have since then been educating people all over Long Island, and we do some work in the five boroughs as well, but specifically focused on high school students here on Long Island. And what we're doing is breast health education. We're teaching you how to reduce your chances of developing breast cancer. We're teaching you how to do a proper breast self-exam. And one of the things we hear from people is that they don't do their own breast exams because they don't know what a lump feels like. They don't know how to do it. So we're trying to make it a little bit easier, teaching you how to do it in the proper
What does
way.
A lump feel like? How do you do? Can you? Is there anything? I know you mostly probably have to show people, but is there something you can tell us so that people listening?
Well, certainly there's some variety in the lumps, and any of them could be a bit suspicious. But the most suspicious ones, they usually tell you something that feels like a hard frozen pea. So if you took a pea out of your freezer and sort of rolled it around your hand, it would give you a little bit of sense. The difficulty is that most of us have a little bit of normal lumpiness. So when people are sort of feeling around in there, they're not quite sure how to distinguish the difference. So we're really talking about anything that has a real shape or texture, or you're looking for a borderline, something you can really get around. But we do know some suspicious lumps can be soft as well, but there's usually some distinct border that you're looking for. But one of the great things about the program is that we bring out silicone breast models that have some of that normal lumpiness, and then some of those suspicious lumps that really give you that sort of tactile experience about figuring out, okay, this is something we need to be able to bring to our physician or nurse practitioner's attention to get checked out, because that's really how you get diagnosed.
Right. Now, this is so interesting because you're bringing up a really interesting point, because you guys educate high school kids and potentially younger, because most women that have mammograms, it starts at 35 for some women. So you're not having a mammogram at 15, but kids that are 15 could potentially have pre-cancer or something,
or
right?
Cancer. Or cancer. Absolutely. So our guideline for getting mammograms is starting at the age of 40, but we know tens of thousands of women getting breast cancer diagnosed in their 20s and 30s. And a lot of times the issue is when you're being diagnosed at such a young age, it actually tends to be a little bit more of an aggressive cancer. So that's why we're going out into the high school, that they're starting not only healthy habits early, but they're starting that self-exam early. Because, again, early detection really is the key to survival.
So that's the only option if you're in high school, is early detection with your own hands.
Absolutely.
Or you're at your doctor, because no one's going to do a mammogram on you.
Right, exactly.
Why not?
Well, it has a lot to do with the structure of our breasts. And when we're young, we have a lot of what we call glandular tissue, and it's normal. But when glandular tissue shows up on a mammogram, it shows pretty much white and cloudy. And the unfortunate part is sometimes that's what cancer turns up on a mammogram. So it actually masks each other. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we'll hear from women who say, I've gone for my mammogram every year. Now I'm being diagnosed with breast cancer, and a late stage breast cancer. Why? Well, it's been hidden there. And so actually, New York State really has taken some steps in 2012. We were the first state to pass the law in our country about educating women about this density issue and the risks that are associated with it.
You're listening to Eileen Pilateri and Susan Samaru from the Moorer Foundation, a breast cancer awareness. It's an education program more than research. Like you guys.
Correct.
Right. Which I think is great because this is a question I don't know if you can answer. You want to answer this question. I love that you guys are education based for exactly the reason you're saying. So when people ask me about breast cancer foundations on Long Island, I always refer them to you guys. I'm not anti breast cancer research, but I kind of feel like, where's the cure already?
Yeah.
You know how much money and time? I personally have been involved with breast cancer charities for such a long time. Where's our cure?
Yeah. And, you know, people do come to us and ask us that, and we don't have the answer for that, obviously. People do come to us also and say, you know, there's so many breast cancer organizations out there. What makes you guys different from everybody else? And our focus, as you just said, is education. We are prevention. We are trying to, as Dr. Moore said, trying to put herself out of business
right.
from being a breast surgeon. So if we
What's she going to do? Go work at a McDonald's? What's her plan after? Once we put her out of business?
She's one I don't think will ever retire, so I don't know. Our hope is that by educating the public the way that we do and starting at that young age, that we can instill those good habits. Because I can tell you, when I started at the foundation almost 4 years ago, I never did my own breast exams. I was one of those women that, well, I started getting my mammograms when I was 40, and my doctor does my checkup once a year. Mm. And I thought that was good enough. And very quickly on, I found out, that's not good enough. I've heard stories where there was one individual who shared with me that she had her mammogram done, came to our program a couple of months later, and then she was just in the shower, and she just kind of, you know, just felt something. And then she laid down, did her exam the way that we taught her how to do it, and she thought, this is weird because I just had my mammogram not so long ago and I thought I was fine. And she went to the doctor and said, this is something that's not right. And it turned out to be cancerous. And she credits us for saving her life. She now has grandchildren. And she tells us, I don't know that I would be here to see my grandchildren growing up without your program.
Okay, where do I do? Where do I start? I'm not even joking. What do you do first?
Scooper takes her shirt
taking
off.
My shirt off. Anthony, you look the other way. So where do you start? Do you start in the underarms?
You start in the armpit, absolutely.
Okay, start in the armpit and then do what from there?
Okay.
What? I want to know. People are listening and they're thinking the same thing.
Okay, so you take your three middle fingers. If you're ever a Girl Scout, it's the Girl Scout sign, or a fan of the Hunger Games. Usually the high school kids know what I'm talking about. And basically, you're going to do small circular movements.
This is Eileen telling you how to do this, by the way, so she's
about
awesome.
About dime-sized movements, if you can picture that. And you're going to do...
Stop that.
I'm trying to give you a visual. You're having three pressures, so all in the same spot. So the lightest pressure, you're barely even moving your skin.
Okay.
The medium pressure is about halfway down, and the deepest pressure is as much as you can tolerate. And honestly, we don't have a lot of nerve endings in our breast tissue, so it doesn't hurt you. You really have to sort of get in there.
Okay.
And so what you're going to do is when you're going to make a step is you just move about a finger's width apart, and you just step and slide those fingers down. We don't want to be picking our fingers up because we don't want to miss any of that breast tissue.
Okay.
And honestly, we got to go all the way down to our bra line working in that step and slide movement. And then when you get down to your bra line, you can just take a step over and come all the way up. And what people don't realize is you've got to go all the way up to your collarbone.
Oh, really?
Most people think it's what fits inside the bra cup, and it's a little bit more than that. The perimeter of where you're doing your check is anywhere from your collarbone to your armpit, down to that fifth rib, down to the center of your sternum or breastbone, all the way up sort of that notched area that we all have on our collarbone.
All of this?
All of that.
Okay.
So it's really important, and I think that's one of, we use the Mammacare method. This is what we're talking about. I like to call it the lawnmower method because you think about it as being overlapping vertical
strips. All three
strips.
Fingers, just keep pressing all three fingers, and then you just crawl them down?
Yep, you're going to do a circular movement.
A circular movement, okay.
And then you're going to take a step about a finger's width.
Okay.
And just move the other fingers down to match. And that's how you're going to move like that. A good self-exam should take you about 15 minutes, give or take, depending on your cup size.
How many times a day should I do this?
Well, we encourage it at least once a month, but I'm not going to stop you from doing it more often. Really, the best time a month is if you have a regular period, about a week after you get your period, because just it's less sensitivity, less swelling. If you don't have a regular period, including you guys out there, just pick one day a month. If your birthday's the 14th and the 14th of every month, just do that check. It's a good reminder for
you. It's a day that you'll remember, right?
Yep.
And you said guys.
Now.
No,
she said guys. Well, you know what? Yes, I have to say, Anthony, men do get breast cancer too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not as frequent, percentage-wise, but...
Come here, let me check. I know exactly what to
don't,
do now.
Don't touch me.
I
want
to say, that's why they're here. It's educational.
Go away.
And I also have to say that often it is, as women, our partners find the lump a good percentage of the time as well. Mm. So you need to know what to look for.
Encourage second base.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And for guys, just keep in mind, guys, most oftentimes if you're going to find a lump, it's going to be right underneath that nipple area. So nobody really should skip that. It feels a little bit different than the rest of our tissue, but really important not to skip that. And we certainly have had guys, and what's the great about going pushing into a high school is that we're doing co-ed programs. So everybody's getting the message, and we certainly have had sons go home and talk to their moms about some of the things that we talk about, that density issue and how mammograms aren't 100% effective. And certainly we've heard some life-saving stories where the mom was like, you know what, I've gotten a letter from the mammogram site, told me I had dense breasts, never went for that follow-up, and sure enough, when the mom went for the sonogram, she found early-stage breast cancer, and such a difference in survivability between early stage and some of those later stages of breast cancer. So it's important, really, that the ladies and the guys are both getting the message.
We're here with Eileen Pilateri and Susan Samaru from the Moorer Foundation. Give me a website or somewhere people can look right now if they want.
It's www.moorerfoundation.org. Very easy.
Maurer.
That's correct.
Now, Anthony and I are sitting, we're adults and we're sitting here kind of giggling over this. So when you go into schools, come on, the kids are probably giggling and laughing. How do you get them to take it seriously?
I have to tell you, the first time I went into a classroom to observe one of our educators doing the program, that's exactly what I thought, that I would see a lot of giggling, just uncomfortable, kind of, you know. I was so surprised at the maturity and the ability for the group. So I
what's that say about us? That makes us look really bad. High school students are more
mature than we are.
They were actually awesome. And what actually really surprised me was that first class that I went to, the boys had more questions than the girls. And you know, one of the first questions we asked the students is, how many of you know someone who has been affected by breast cancer?
Everybody raises their hand. Yeah, of course. This is Long Island. I mean, it's you can't be here if you don't know somebody, if not a member of your family. Everybody knows somebody affected by breast cancer. But I think not only is it a Long Island thing, it seems to be the case as we move across the country as well. But we have more instances of breast cancer here. Do you guys have a handle on what that's about, Eileen?
It does feel like that. So nationwide, the number we use is about 1 out of every 8 women being affected by an invasive breast cancer. It definitely seems like there's some pockets of breast cancer cases that we see. The Department of Health sort of does a cancer registry. So we know there's some towns where there's more cases of breast cancer than can be expected. And sometimes we have a slightly higher ratio. Sometimes we tip closer to 1 in 7, depending on the year. But that's about the average. That's the number we're using, is about 1 out of every 8 in the United States.
I saw something shocking. Eileen, I'm guessing you're the one who's going to answer this question. But I saw something shocking in a documentary where an oncologist said that she would not be surprised, that this is not the case, but she would not be surprised if she found out that breast cancer was a virus, that it was viral in some way. I thought that was shocking that a doctor would say something like that. Have you guys heard anything like that? Does that sound reasonable to you, or what do you think?
Well, that's sort of new to me, but I know many chronic diseases, they sort of trace back to inflammation. So whether that's something that is virus-related, that's really the first I'm hearing of it. But we're seeing things that where people are recommending taking that aspirin a day because they think it may lower breast cancer risk.
And, wow.
And we know that inflammation plays a role in a lot of chronic diseases. So I think we'll start to learn more about that as they're doing more breast cancer research in that area.
And, you know, that brings up an interesting point. We hear something new and different every day. Mm. When we go into the classrooms, and students, just young people, just grab onto things that they hear through social media, through the news, wherever. And some of this stuff is very confusing.
Right.
What's true? What's not? You know, coffee is good for you today. It's not good for you tomorrow.
Right.
You know, so what do you do with that information? So one of the things we do in our presentations is We don't know what causes breast cancer, but there is information we do know. So we do try to debunk some of those myths, and we do share the information that we know to be accurate or correct.
Susan, what's a myth that people think about breast cancer that you can debunk right now?
One of the questions that students will ask is, if I wear an underwire bra, will that increase my chances of developing breast cancer?
I've heard that.
And no, the answer is no. You can wear your underwire bra and you'll be okay.
There's all sorts of versions of that we hear. We hear sports bra. We say hear wearing a dirty bra or wearing your bra overnight. All sorts of versions of that one. And certainly they're all myths.
So there's no connection between whether you wear a bra, don't wear a bra, what kind of bra you wear. That has nothing to do. There's no connection between that and breast cancer whatsoever.
No, that's definitely a myth.
Okay. What's another myth that people think? I mean, how about the soy milk thing?
You know, soy is something different. That's one of those topics where Susan relates to. Sometimes we hear it's, you know, dangerous and be careful and avoid it. And we've actually seen that sort of swing back the other way where they think if you've been having soy most of your life that there may be some protective properties. We see people of Asian descent, ladies living in Asian countries, have lower rates of breast cancer. They think it may relate back to diet issues for them. So as everything, we say everything in moderation. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're trying to gather some more information about that. Some of the other ones we hear are getting hit in the breast cause breast cancer. That's a major one. This one, I feel like I could see where that myth sort of started from, because sometimes we heard a guy in Plainview told us, oh, I've got a lump in my chest. So I said, okay, how did you get that? Well, he was doing paintball. And I don't know if you guys have ever done paintball,
yes,
but you get shot, you get a nice welt.
Yeah.
So he happened to get shot in his chest when he was 8 years old, and he has a lump in his chest, but it's a benign lump, meaning it's not cancerous, and it's a fat necrosis, and it's fine. But I think sometimes that's where these myths start from, and they sort of grow from there.
Then you get people like Anthony who are just, you know, they're dumb, and you think, because like, I get hit in the head. You know, you get hit in the head, it makes you dumb.
Yeah, gee, thanks. How are you funded?
That's one of the challenges we face. We don't charge for our programs. You know, we go into schools and we provide the programs for free. The main way that we get our money is through our own private fundraising efforts. So we have a number of special events going on all year long. And living here on Long Island, you're hearing about
Mora Foundation all the time. You guys are doing like 5Ks and 10Ks, and people are always running and do. I really hear about events that you guys do all the time.
Yes. So our main events are, we have a Pink Diamond Gala in October during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We have a bowling event in the winter. We have a walk in June through the LI 2-day walk. We have a motorcycle ride in the summer. And we have a golf outing in the spring. So we try to hit all of the seasons, and we also try to hit different demographics. You know, one of the things you don't want to do is you don't want to keep going back to the same people over and over again. You
know, the pink diamond people are different than the motorcycle people?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. There were, you know, you'd be surprised. There is some overlap. And but we're also looking at it's different price points. You know, so we are really trying to connect with as many different people as possible. And we're also trying to get the awareness out there. So the more people we can reach, the wider that we can get our name out there, the better it is for getting the word out about breast health. So we just had our motorcycle ride recently, and all along the way, all of our stops, everyone wants to know, what are you guys doing? What is this for? It's a great way to just talk it up and explain what our mission is about.
Right. And what's your next big event?
So our Pink Diamond Gala is coming up on October 4th.
Where is it? What's a Pink Diamond Gala?
It's at the Crest Hollow Country Club.
We love that place.
Yes. And it's a wonderful venue. And our honoree this year is John King from J. King's Food Services, a longtime supporter of the organization. And we're expecting about 300 people. And we're hoping to raise a lot of money. We have raffles. We have an awesome band that evening. We're going to have a wine tasting because John also, he owns a wine distribution company. Mm. So he's adding a nice added flavor to the evening.
Is this both fancy and schmancy? I mean, you're talking about like black tie, all that kind of stuff?
It's actually, I think over the years we've moved away from that black tie. I think most events have moved away from that formal attire, and it's during the week. It's on a Wednesday night.
Okay.
So I think people feel like, I don't want to go home and have to get dressed.
Right. I don't like putting pants on a Wednesday.
So it is a business attire.
Oh, okay, business attire. All right.
And it is a real fun night. It's not your typical gala. It's not a lot of speeches. Mm-hmm. It's more of come and have a fun night.
Is it sold out? Can we still come?
You can still come, yes.
And so how do we get tickets?
You can reach us through our Maura Foundation website, MaureFoundation.org.
Oh, it's super fun.
How do schools get in touch with you if they want you to come in?
They actually can use the website as well. It's one of the easiest ways. There's a link right there on requesting a program, and they just submit some dates that they're interested in having us come in. And we have 5 people going out doing education, so we're usually able to accommodate pretty closely their first requests. And they can always contact the organization as well if they need additional information. They can reach out to me. I'm the program manager, and really give them a little bit more detailed information about the topics that we cover and, you know, how we normally schedule the programs.
So if a teacher is listening, can they just contact you? Do you guys, is it a big assembly? Do you just come to the health class? How does it usually work?
Well, we've done it in a couple of different styles. I definitely prefer pushing into the health classes. We come for, you know, one period out of the day and be able to provide the information. And what's nice about that is generally we're pushing in during a time where the teacher's already covering either cancer prevention in the curriculum or human sexuality. Mm. So we really sort of support each other with that. And then the health teacher is there afterwards. If people have questions, if they're going home and they're finding something and they want additional information, they can help point them to the appropriate resource as well. But we've done assembly styles. We basically work with the school's needs and what works best for them.
We do find when we have those smaller groups in the classroom, it's a little more intimate. And if kids have questions, they might feel a little more comfortable asking it.
Right,
in
a classroom setting than if they're in a big like assembly room.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more chance to be interactive, ask those questions, those myths we're talking about. We certainly hear more of those type questions in that smaller setting.
No, I mean, I think you said a lot of important things during this morning's interview, but I think one of the things that you said that I think is incredibly important is that all people, men and women, boys, it doesn't matter how young you are. The big myth is that you don't get breast cancer till you're 40 and have your first mammogram. But people have breast cancer at all ages, so you should start looking right now. Like, the minute this ends, you should go check yourself out, check your spouse, your significant other, your kids. Everybody should check. What age should they start?
We say by the time they're 18 years old, and we certainly, you know, we've been doing this for 22 years, and we know of high school students that have been diagnosed with breast cancer. We know of students who have found lumps as a result of our program. So, you know, if they're 16, 17 years old, we're encouraging them to start doing that because the better sense they have of their own blueprint of their breast tissue, the better they will be able to detect something that's a change for them, something that's an abnormality for them, and be able to address that right away. And that's mostly, it's a message of empowerment. We really don't want to walk in and say, we're talking about cancer. We're not. We're really talking about health and promoting your health.
Prevention.
Absolutely.
But Eileen, that's a very big point, because I think the whole concept of prevention is something that needs to be across the board. I mean, prevention for everything, like your diet. Yes. You should care about all of that stuff,
yes,
regardless of how old you are. You should start thinking about, I mean, you're healthy right now, but you have to think about 20-year-old you, 30-year-old you, 40-year-old you. Years and years of not taking care of yourself has its effect on your body. So this is a prevention across the board.
And that's the other piece that we spend a lot of time talking about is healthy lifestyle choices. What you can be doing from starting at a young age is eating healthier. We actually have a nutritional swap list that we give to the students that have, this is what the calorie count is on a croissant. And if you swap that out for
Oatmeal.
For oatmeal. What's the difference in the calories and the fat content? So it's great to actually have that visual that you can see what you can be doing.
Give us the website one more time, Susan.
It's www.maurerfoundation.org. And our telephone number is 631-524-5151.
Thank you, Eileen Pilateri and Susan Samrow from the Maurer Foundation. So much education. Thank you so much, you guys. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having us.